glorious afternoon out on the West Shropshire border at a place called Marrington Escapes, near Marrington Hall it is, near Cherbury. And I was out there, Chris, to meet an author, a Shropshire author, who's been described as our answer to Gilly Cooper. Now, I don't know if you're into the Gilly Cooper world. Have you watched Rivals on TV?
Yeah, I have, yes, yeah.
Disney Plus set, which is absolutely great fun. Well, she reckons that it's the Shropshire countryside which has inspired her to become a published author for the first time. So I thought, what better than to go and have a wander through this landscape with her to find out all about her story? And this is what happened.
Right, let me paint the picture for you. Bits of blue sky, lots of cotton wool clouds. We're on the West Shropshire border, not far from Cherbury on the Marrington Estate. And I'm joined by...
I'm Bronte Bennett. I am an author of The Squire. And this is the location that first inspired the book.
So take me back, how far does your relationship with Marrington go then? When did you first come here?
Well, we moved to Shropshire in 2021, and the following year I came here and spent some time investing in my writing, because outside of authoring, I run a business, I've got a day job, family commitments, and getting my word count down was proving to be a real problem. So I knew I needed to take some time out if I really wanted to write this book. So I came to Marrington and I stayed here for a few days, and that's how The Squire was born.
And I guess anybody that's been here will maybe recognise parts of the estate on your pages, will they?
Oh, for sure. And there's lots of references to country houses, beautiful countryside. There's references to country pursuits, plenty of references to country pursuits. And I think you just get that sense of an estate, small villages, country living, all of the things that we associate.
See, country living, you see, we have to watch what's driving up behind us, don't we? We have to let the workers go past, don't we? What is it about this estate then that you've really fallen in love with?
The space, the size of the sky. I mean, how is the sky bigger here than it is in a lot of places? There's just vastness. And I think that mentally, when I have space in my environment, it feels like I've got more space in my head. I really am massively influenced by my environment, as many extroverts are. And so for me to focus, I need to minimise useless distractions and maximise useful inspiration.
Yeah.
And that's what I get from this place.
And on this Dingle Valley walk that we're on at the moment, we've got a sort of babbling stream brook on our right-hand side. I know you, people have spotted otters and all sorts of incredible wildlife. It's a natural sort of bowl, isn't it, here, really? A bowl of wildlife.
It's a bowl of wildlife. And Stableford, which is my fictional village, is built around a large loop in a river, which people will recognise, as rivers often have these loops. And I think that there's something about the way that the land creates these pockets and bowls and safe spaces and then fills them with nature that just makes me feel happy. And I think the other thing is, you could be in any year in history sometimes in a place like this. You're away from all the modernness that we're being force-fed a lot of the time these days. It's really about greenery and fresh air. And as I stand here, I'm hearing water, I'm hearing birdsong, I'm hearing the breeze in the trees and in the grasses. And honestly, I am morphing into author mode even as we stand here, because...
This is good, don't let me stop you.
This is what I need. This feeds me. Imagination is really good for storyline and characterisation. You need an environment to inspire you. If you're going to describe it, you need to hear it, smell it, touch it, taste it and feel it. So I think that all of those senses really contribute to the way that I'm able to describe the situation that my characters find themselves in and bring it to life for the reader.
So talk to me a bit about the contrast then. You mentioned that you're an extrovert.
Yeah.
And yet coming into a sort of solitude like this is one of the most creative environments to do what you do.
Yes. There's a huge misconception about introversion and extroversion. And everyone thinks that if you're an extrovert, you have to be constantly in company of others and stimulated by external factors. But it's not about being constantly surrounded by people. It's about being stimulated by external factors. And I am stimulated by these external factors. I'm taking it all in and I'm using it for my output. It's not the same as... So I know lots of introverted authors who can create the world inside their own head, whereas I need the world outside to input into my vision for Stableford and the surroundings. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does completely, because you're surrounded by lots. You might not be surrounded by lots of people, but you're surrounded by lots of incredible things. And that's it, isn't it? Let's go and drink in what's around the next corner, shall we? Let's keep walking.
Let's do it.
Kingfisher's Seat we've reached now. Take your seat here for a glimpse of exquisite kingfishers as they dart along the river with their striking mix of iridescent blue. I guess this comes with the usual warning that we can't guarantee wildlife sightings at any moment, but what a viewing spot this is.
Isn't it though? And also, what a lovely place just to sit. You know, one of the things that people talk about a lot is mindfulness, and being an extrovert and having a busy brain, mindfulness is something I have to actively pursue. It doesn't come naturally to me. And so if I find myself in a place where I am looking for something, I can sit peacefully for ages waiting for that flash of blue, because my busy brain is busy waiting for something to happen. And at the same time, I'm being entirely mindful. So I'm observing the flowers in the river, I'm listening to the sounds around me, and it smells heavenly out here. You can't smell it if you're listening, of course, but it's warm grass. It smells like... I can also get floral scents off the cow's parsley and the other... Oh, it's just, it's really hard to describe, but you'll know what it smells like if you've ever been in a meadow when the sun's shining on the grass and you get that almost toasty grass smell.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm also looking up there and thinking, look at that lodge up there, and what a fantastic vantage point that's got.
Wow, yeah, isn't that stunning? I mean, this is just picture perfect. I'm an author, but imagine if you were an artist, a painter, a photographer, any of the arts would be inspired in a space like this. It's got it all going on, I think. Delivering all the good stuff.
I read somewhere that per head of population, Shropshire has the highest percentage of creatives in the country. And I guess places like this are part of the reason why, aren't they?
That I didn't know. And that doesn't surprise me, actually. In fact, you know what? Now you say it, Carl. Until I moved to Shropshire, I didn't put pen to paper in any meaningful way. And so the journey began here at Marrington. But you're right, the county as a whole has so much to offer the creative brain. It's just inspiration everywhere you look. And I know I've said this before, but it's that sense of going back in time a bit, nostalgia. I think I get a sense of nostalgia in environments like this and reconnect with my inner child.
Because I was just going to say it's childhood for me, childhood. Going out and playing in the wild outdoors and being called back in with your parents when it's dark.
Exactly, coming here with your kids and that you knowing that they can run around like lunatics with their elbows sticking out, happy as Larry, bit caked in a bit of mud, maybe a little paddle in the river. Happiness, absolute joy, no screens, just lovely fun times outside.
So take me back then to that first day when you decided, right, I'm going to put pen to paper here and I'm going to write a book. How did you start? Where were you when you started?
Oh,
and why did you
question.
Start?
So I was in the hall and I was imagining the olden days, and I am a big fan of the whole sort of Jane Austen, Emily Bronte, you know, which is interesting when you think about it. You know, I think with a name like Bronte Bennett, how could you possibly not be taken back into the romantic literature of the time? And I was imagining the squire of the estate in his hall and imagining him as a man who had everything but was lonely because he didn't have love. And that's how it started. So I really just sort of conjured my lead man out of my imagination, and then I conjured what kind of woman would make him happy, and the story started there. And all of the references to the countryside and the hall and the dogs, hunting, shooting, fishing, all of that kind of stuff came out of the inspiration of the surrounding area. Heron.
Oh, look at that.
Wow, stunning. Oh, I didn't know they went in trees. Did you know they went in trees?
That's a good vantage point, isn't it? That's a good
they went in trees.
Sentry lookout for us, you see.
Yeah.
So we're wandering up to another junction here in the river. What I love about this is that the family that owns and runs Marrington Escapes got its own joinery and has created a new bridge made to be look like it's been there for centuries, isn't it?
Yeah, I can absolutely see Elizabeth Bennett leaning on that bridge in her finery, probably sneering a bit at Mr. Darcy. I can see that happening. And I can see Marcus and Morgan on there, probably having a row, actually.
When you visualise Mr. Darcy, who's your go-to? Is it Colin Firth?
Always Colin Firth. He's always my Mr. Darcy. Yeah. Colin Firth is the Mr. Darcy.
So here we go, Dingle Bridge, gloriously handcrafted timber-clad bridge in the joinery workshop. Yeah, so it had to be built, disassembled, transported, then craned into position. Because that's a logistical operation. The great thing about being in the middle of the countryside is the solitude, but the access to these places isn't always great, is it, if you want to do some construction work?
No, that's a really good point. And actually, in my lifetime, I've lived and worked in some very remote locations. So I've seen that sort of thing happen before. And you just don't realise how much thought goes into the engineering for something like that. It's not as simple as just engineering it into position. You've got to be able to think about it as a jigsaw, create it, build it, take it apart, and then remember where all the bits go.
Exactly.
Not my skill set.
If I was doing that, by the time I'd finished, there'd be three pieces left over and I wouldn't
100%.
Know what to put them.
And so. And the Allen key would have gone missing.
Yeah, exactly.
Down the back of the sofa.
Let's poke our noses over the top of the bridge, see what we can see, shall we? It's actually perfect today, isn't it? Because it's sunny, but it's not roasting hot. So just quite nice for a little amble around.
Oh, right. OK, and there's the flowers that I was looking at before. So you can see that they're growing from deep in the river and then got these tiny little white flowers all over the surface of the river. Absolutely beautiful. Looks like wedding confetti.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Lovely. So The Squire is your first book?
Yes.
Hang on, we're posing for a photo shoot here.
Yeah, no,
let's pose for post the cameras.
As well.
So The Squire is your first book. Did it turn out to be what you thought it would be when you visualised what your first book was going to be? And how similar is it to the kind of things that you would have read?
Well, there's two questions there. And the answer to the first one is that I am what's known in the world of authoring as a pantser, which means that I never really know what the book is going to look like. I create the characters and then they tell me what's going to happen. So I didn't entirely know where it was going to go, and it's got some twists and turns and a bit of a surprise ending, but it is ultimately romance. And to answer your second question, the works of Jane Austen and Emily Bronte and the Mills and Boone books when I was a teenager, well, probably not even a teen, I think I started reading Mills and Boone at age 11, so it was all that kind of, essentially, they're the adult version of Cinderella, aren't they? And then I found Jilly Cooper.
I was just going to say, you're channeling a bit of Jilly Cooper. So,
oh, Dame Jilly. And of course, at the moment, there's Rivals has been taking over our TVs. And the younger generation who perhaps never had any access to Jilly or never read Jilly are discovering her talent. And I am so flattered to have been described as very Jilly Cooper-esque in my writing. And she, of course, is... If you read Jilly Cooper, she's constantly referencing the flora and fauna, the birds that she can hear, the sky that she can see, the sound of the wind in the trees. The reference she makes to her environment is really relatable for me, because I can read in her books how she has also been influenced by the environment in the same way as I am. So I think that she is my number one inspiration.
Having never read any Jilly Cooper, but watched the Disney show Rivals, how accurate is it to the book then?
There are some things that aren't entirely accurate. So Rupert Campbell Black is a blonde, and I'm very upset that he's not a blonde in the programme, but I'm prepared to overlook that. Otherwise, the whole tone and cheekiness is spot on, and I think that my romance is cheeky. So, thank you, Dame Jilly. May you rest in peace for your inspiration.
Do you think if you'd not come to Shropshire and not come here, you'd have been able to write it?
That is something I have asked myself, and I am not sure. I think I'd still be stuck in the place where I wasn't able to distance myself from the distractions that stopped me from writing. And I think once I'd come here and started, then I couldn't stop. Then I was, like, powering on, because I was full of imagery and senses had been really stimulated, and I was lost in this hall with this handsome but rather naughty squire who was just looking for the woman that was going to make him happy for the rest of his life. And then I couldn't leave it alone.
just going to leave it alone.
Is he based on a person where the names have been changed to protect the innocent, or is he a completely fictitious person then?
He is a figment of my imagination, and I have to be careful how I answer this because I have a husband and I don't want him getting jealous of my book boyfriend.
What sort of working patterns do you have then when it comes to writing? Because you mentioned that you've got all sorts of other strings to your bow.
Yes.
How do you write? How do you discipline? Are you the sort of person that wakes up in the middle of the night, suddenly had an idea and has got to go and put pen to paper, or is it more discipline than that?
No, discipline doesn't really enter into my life, which is why I need Marrington Escapes, because I can come here, I can fully focus. It's a bit like, this is my downhill start. So I'm at the top of the hill, Marrington Escapes gives me the momentum, and then I can keep going. And then when I get stuck, which happens, I need that time again. But in between times, I've got a yellow chair at home that's my writing chair, and I sit in that and write. But when I feel like I'm running out of steam, I need to come back to this environment and just reconnect with the source of the inspiration.
Tell me what you are doing then when you're not writing books.
Well, I run a global training business, and my professional background includes working in places like Africa, India, the Maldives, Thailand. So when I'm writing, I've got lots of that to draw on. I also do a lot of work in the UK. Lots of work with hospitality and businesses in general. It's our own business, so the office is at home and we travel to our clients wherever they might be in the world. And I'm also, so I'm a coach, a facilitator and a speaker. And I think what's occurring to me as I get older is that storytelling is in my DNA, and that whatever I've ever done in any part of my career, it's always about story, it's about storytelling. So whether I'm teaching people how to be better managers, or I'm doing a keynote about emotional intelligence, or I'm talking to people about how personality types clash, that's an interesting point. So our key business outside of being Bronte, as I like to put it, in fact, I might write a book called Being Bronte one day, I think it's got a ring to it, is about how different personalities interact. And that really plays a part when I'm doing my characterisation.
I imagine that's really useful because you know what's going to spark and what's going to create a reaction with
exactly.
With your third party
readers. What triggers them, what sets them off, when they can't communicate because they're stuck in their own preference and they can't move past it. And all of those years of watching people's behaviours and analysing, like going about analysing people. Honestly, sometimes people come for dinner and they say, are you going to analyse me? Are you going to spend this dinner party analysing me?
So you're a people watcher, are you? You're a people watcher.
Yes, 100% a people watcher. And I think that's another reason why it's nice to have space like this without too many people, because I have got to have time for my mind to create the story, not collecting data as much as experiencing an environment, which is a different, entirely different thing. So I'm constantly cataloguing, but I need to catalogue from different sources of inspiration. My job provides me with enormous inspiration when it comes to people and what makes them tick. Environments like this provide me with the space to create an imaginary world based on this beautiful environment and the sounds and the smells and the sights. And so it's a perfect, you know, I love the job that I do and I love writing. I'm equally passionate about both of them and I don't see a massive disconnect between the two, in truth.
No, and presumably there's going to be less of a disconnect or more of an overlap now than there's ever been, I guess. So you say 100%. Book one's out, book two's already
well underway,
in progress, isn't it?
Well underway.
Can you give me any exclusive sneak peeks and clues?
Well, what I can tell you is that it's 7 years after book one that our protagonists will be filling in the gaps between book one and book two. There's a particular favourite character that a lot of people really love called Fenella, who's in an unhappy marriage in book one. And her story continues in book two. And my protagonists are faced with some challenges that are challenges that people experience in real relationships, and they have to work it out or not. Even I don't know yet, because I'm a pantser, so I don't know what they're going to do. I'll just have to wait and see what happens on the last page.
Have you got a target finish date of a publication date?
I would like to have this ready for people to buy for Christmas this year, because the last one was ready for the public to consume for Christmas last year. But that may not be a realistic target. However, what I do know is that if I'm struggling, I just need to come back to Marrington Escapes for a few days and I'll finish it. because that's what this place does. It gives me that space to do that. Honestly, a couple of days here and I can achieve more than I achieve in months.
How much time do you think you've spent here then?
Oh God, I don't know. I'd have to look back through my calendars. But I have spent many days, potentially even running to weeks.
So get your crystal ball out then for me briefly. Where do you see all of this going? Do you see maybe if we're having a wander through the grounds in 4 or 5 years' time, you'll have half a dozen books under your belt? What do you think?
Yeah, I'll certainly have between 3 and 5 books published. Because I love the whole Jilly Cooper vibe, and she had the Rutshire Chronicles, mine is probably the Stableford Chronicles. So that could just keep running and running. But what I won't do is let it run until it's lost all its steam. But I have umpteen other ideas for other stories.
And what, and translate to the screen? I mean, when Disney Plus come calling, yes. What's going to happen with them?
Carl, I think that's probably where we're going with this. I should probably be on Netflix or Disney Plus UK with my TV adaptation. I mean, that's the dream, right? And you never know. And I'm just going to keep going and see where I end up. But I think, you know, the worst case scenario for me is I believe in a squiggly career, and I believe that there are 3 phases in our careers. There's the building phase, there's the succeeding phase, and then there's the this is my exit strategy phase. And for me, I think writing's the exit strategy. It's the thing I'll do until the day I'm pushing up daisies, because that is ultimately the nicest way. I don't want to retire completely. My brain's too busy for that. So I shall write until I die, like Barbara Cartland.
And when you do get that filming deal, presumably you'll say to the producers, there's this beautiful country estate just near the West Shropshire border 100%. That you ought to consider for a location.
Oh, Carl, genius. Yes. Now that I've got the location, I just need to find my leading man.
There's lots of them around Cherbury. Lots of... You don't want somebody with a dodgy knee hobbling around and worrying about getting stones in his shoes, trust me. You want someone who takes life's challenges in their stride, don't you?
Okay, yes, I probably do. We need a Marcus Hardcastle. We will keep our eyes peeled for him. But yes, I think you're absolutely right. You know, Marrington Escapes, all jokes apart, as a location. They wouldn't have to do anything. Look at it. It's just waiting for the opportunity to be seen more widely. And you know what? This is Shropshire. And a lot of people say that Shropshire is one of the biggest counties nobody's ever heard of. And it is jaw-droppingly beautiful. So if you're listening to this and you're wondering what you can expect from Shropshire, just look up Marrington Escapes and have a little look at some of the gallery images, and that will give you everything you need to know.
Couldn't have put it better myself. Great to spend time with you. I look forward. I haven't read the first episode yet, so I've got to read the first volume and then see what volume 2's got in store for us. Thanks so much for your time.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Carl. Thank you.
The